Well, I would say what's missing starts in the hiring process of finding out what are the person in front of you, what are their personal goals for their life? Like, true, and I understand that, there are certain things we can ask and there are other things we absolutely cannot ask. But I don't see how it could be wrong to ask somebody, not where do you see yourself in 5 years, but what are the goals you have? I would love to know. I want to be able to see if our company can support you in that. Are you planning to go back to school? Do you see yourself wanting to travel at some point? Tell me more about you and what your values are. What would you say are your top three values? How do those values match what our company's values are? Are you wanting a job because it's you need steady employment? Or are you wanting to actually create a career? And what would that career look like? See, all of that has to happen before the person ever sits in front of the sales manager.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang. All right. Now, I had an opportunity to share with Stacy, who's on our show with us today, that I have been facilitating peer roundtable sessions with revenue gen and sales and marketing executives for the past couple of years. And one of the things that constantly comes up as an issue is how to find and retain good salespeople. And so Stacy is actually going to share with us insights in regards to it isn't what you think and it ain't what it used to be, right? But before we get into that discussion, Stacy Hall, welcome. And please tell us a little bit about your expertise and background.
Jim, thank you. And it's fun to be here with you and with the gang. And my background is actually about everything you could possibly do in sales, corporate sales for-profit, nonprofit, and then for the last 20-something years, supporting entrepreneurs as a coach and consultant, which means I'm selling every single day. So that's really, in a nutshell, is my background.
Well, and so that there's also a lot more to that in regards to the psychology associated with sales, sales effectiveness, conversions, hiring, retention. And that's really, for me, when I started going into and looking at your latest book that you wrote, Selling from Your Comfort Zone, is we're going to start getting into that today. But here's a couple things that I want us to really put into context in order for us to be able to launch our discussion. Okay. 67% of B2B salespeople fail to meet their sales quota. Buying teams are larger. Buying teams are more dispersed. Buyers have had it with seller obnoxiousness and are resigning from the traditional seller-buyer relationship and interaction. It's harder to find good salespeople, and more people are avoiding the sales role. Now, in the book, you actually introduced the alignment marketing formula. So how does the alignment marketing formula fix these problems?
All right, let's get to it. First off, it is not hard to find good salespeople. Great people, especially if we take the label off, great people who desire jobs where they can bring their purpose, their calling, their mission into alignment with, that's the alignment marketing formula, into alignment with a company's mission and purpose. That's what people are looking for. They want to marry their own purpose to someone else's purpose and make money doing it while serving other people. That's the mindset that corporations and companies that are hiring people to represent their products and services have to remember. It's all about purpose and calling. So the alignment marketing formula is a formula for a salesperson or a company who's in the process of attracting a team of people into any department, let alone sales. And it's all about making sure we first are aware of what our values are. What are we aligned with? So a human being knows their core values. A company must know its values, its mission, its purpose. Then the message that is communicated out has to be in alignment with those values, that mission, that purpose. Then it's very easy to attract people, talk to people, and identify if their values and purpose are in alignment with the company's mission and purpose and values. That's where alignment comes in. Belief, and this is why this statement that it's hard to find good salespeople is so damaging, because that's a belief that is out there in the sales industry now. Like, and the media keeps perpetuating it. Well, without belief in the fact that you can find good people, you're going to set up systems to keep those good people away. And then consistency, a consistent approach. So a salesperson being consistent in sharing their message with the right people, and a company consistently standing by its mission and its purpose and consistently encouraging its team of people to align theirs with the company, not adopt like brainwashing the companies, but continuously marrying. And there are many, many ways, and I talk about that in the book, to marry the two parties' missions, purpose, and values together so that people feel at home in a comfortable place.
Okay, well, hold on. As you're talking about that, for me, I start thinking that, whoa, we have a quite different need and expectation for what a sales leader does based on what you're saying. Is that not true?
That's exactly what I'm saying, is if it's the old paradigm in wrapped in this belief, it's hard to find good salespeople. No, it's not hard to find them. What's difficult, and now I'm going to share why companies that have not shifted and changed are having difficulty. And we're going to go back to human behavior and psychologists, because that's what if I'm talking to a human being, whether I'm applying for a job, hiring a job, or communicating with a customer or a prospect, I want to understand human behavior. Psychologists have told us over and over again through studies on the brain, the word no, N-O, produces feelings of fear, anxiety, upset, worry, agitation. Can I go on? And yet companies still adopt the old, let's learn how to overcome objections, which sets up for a person, you're telling me to expect a no. And where I have to put all my time and attention is on how to deal with that no. Why don't we set up a process like I share in Selling from Your Comfort Zone, an expectation of a yes, and then build sales training that leads to the yes coming easier. Maybe if we did that, a lot more people would go into sales because people love to hear yeses.
You know, as you say that, we use the phrase is overcoming objections. I mean, that in itself could be some misplaced perceptions in regards to control.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's exactly what I say. Yeah. Do we want to control the conversation, or do we want to have an actual relationship that's satisfying to the other person so that when we show up, they're happy to see us? They want to hear what's new. They become a partner with us. We hear this all the time about relationship marketing, but then we teach still. It's still being taught out there. The script, not to go off the script, and how to make sure you know how to deal with every objection, as if that's going to produce a sale.
Well, as you're talking, though, I also do start thinking about the products and services that the organization has, and whether or not the size of the solution, there is a very distinct difference you know, between a transactional sale where somebody could whip out, you know, a purchase card or a P card or, you know, credit card and then make a quick transaction versus, you know, something that is, you know, a complex solution that's solving a complex problem that takes a lot more of that discovery and back and forth and relationship building. You know, there was a Forbes came out with a quote that I pulled that said the amount at which somebody is willing to invest in your product solution is equal to or commensurate with the level of trust you need to capture from them.
And I actually talk about that in the book, Selling from Your Comfort Zone. And I'm going to, if I agree with you, it takes more trust, the more expensive the product. Absolutely. However, it takes the same amount of empathy and listening. If you want the person, yes, people, small price times, B2C products. We can go to Amazon. We can go to Walmart. We can go anywhere if we just want the dang product. But if we need information before we buy the product, what we want is a human being who is there, who cares to provide the information. So for me, it's the same process. Can I be the person who's going to provide knowledge, information, not promotion? Marketing's promotion. Let's leave marketing over there. If I'm doing the sales part of it, then I'm going to bring knowledge. I'm going to bring caring. I'm going to bring empathy. I'm going to bring questions to find out what answers are needed. And to me, that's the same process, whether it's a $10 product that somebody needs information about or a $10,000 product.
Okay, so you and I had a good chuckle before we actually started recording and talking about you know, how things are going to flow for our discussion today. And we came, and we kind of pointed on something in regards to old ways of thinking or status quo bias. And, you know, we talked about, for example, what I say is I'm like, that Rolodex mindset is dead. And you kind of laugh. Yeah. But I think it's really important for us to, you know, focus in on, because the world, you know, the world was changing as we started entering the pandemic shutdown in regards to a lot of the things that we're discussing that are of issue now. Yeah. And it's massively changed post. We had such an extended period in regards to being through all of this, that it's absolutely changed us forever and it's not going back. And so when you start talking about some of these status quo bias issues, that they are essentially dinosaur extinction thinking, what are some of the things that often come up for you?
All right. Well, you mentioned it, the Rolodex, the idea that a good salesperson is somebody who's got lots of contacts. Well, do they have the right contacts? Have they made relationship with people who are in alignment with the company's mission purpose? Do they have a need for that product and service? So maybe they do, and maybe they don't. It is not necessary for people to come with that. And the reason it isn't is because it's so easy. If somebody really is, well, I'm going to back up for a second because I wanted to say this before, and I, without saying it, it's not going to make sense. So in the hiring process, in the interviewing process, if we ask a person who is applying for the job, tell me about your background and why this product or this service that you would be representing is meaningful to you. How would it have helped you if you had had it in the past? Or how will it help you personally going forward? Is this making sense? Like, I really want to bring it down to, we've got to make sure that the person who's speaking about it has empathy for the product and service first, passion for it as well. Then if they do, the people they know, whether they've ever talked to them about products and services before, those are people who are going to be interested in what they're doing. And we can teach them how to easily make connections with people like the people they already know without being spammy and pushy, because that's the joy of social media. you can meet people anywhere if you do it appropriately.
Okay. Well, I think also too, when you start thinking about that and putting that in context, I think we're almost in a situation. And when you look at the statistics on people and all these boomers who are, you know, the decision makers, or you used to be the decision makers in organizations, have left. Many of them, as they say, are now doing the quiet quitting thing. And it's now tomorrow guy's problem, or tomorrow lady's problem. And so the whole Rolodex mindset, it really has a lot of context to it. I mean, it's the psychological element that you're talking about. It's also talking about, you know, who we are connected to. But I think, you know, for me, again, we talked about some of these bias and status quo problems. That's the Rolodex one. What's another one that you often run into?
Well, I'm going to say that it's funny because there aren't that many. They just kept getting repeated. As we've talked about the Rolodex concept, it's hard to find good salespeople. You need to follow a script. These are the dinosaurs that need to go. And one more that we haven't talked about. And that is, and you can think about the cartoon that we used to see all the time of salespeople, that they knock on the door, they knock on an office door, right? Person opens the door and they immediately start selling, and the person starts to shut the door and the foot goes in to keep the door, right? That's where the concept of pushy came through is, okay, we cannot start selling anymore first. We just can't. People who do that, you mentioned it at the start of the show. This is what people hate. I don't need to hear one more promotion in my head. It is not novel. It is not new. It is adding to the stress, right? And everybody's got stress now. I mean, that's, name me one person who doesn't. We need to ask questions. That's what I don't see happening enough. Questions about even, can you share with me how long you've been in the job, or why did you choose to take this job? You know, questions that seem so far away from the product out here, but help us understand who it is we are in front of and what's going on in the company and what's your part in it and how do you want to see the company move forward. And if somebody says, why are you asking me all these questions? What I say is, because I want to make sure that if we're going to be in relationship with each other, I'm adding to your success, not aggravating you and wasting your time by being here in front of you. The more you can tell me about what your goals are, the more I can either know whether my product is going to help you, or I might actually know people who are going to help you. I just want to be in relationship with you. And if anybody thinks this doesn't work, I'm going to tell you, I have had a dear friend in my life. He's no longer a vendor for me. He hasn't been for a long time. But years ago when I worked for an ad agency, and I'm going to give him a shout out, Pete Hoffman, he was selling radio advertising. I was a media buyer. And he knew how to do this years before anyone else was doing it. That's why he came in, he started asking me questions, and I'm so weird. Well, we wound up becoming friends. He came to my wedding. I went to his wedding. We've stayed friends through all these years, and he changed jobs along the way. And I was one of his clients each step along the way when it made sense. But the people that man brought into my life to help make my job easier was gold. This is what people are craving, satisfying relationships.
You know, as you say that, I'm talking about that peer roundtable group with these revenue and sales executives is, there was one gentleman who was talking about their organization, and he was talking about their BDRs and SDRs, and he was saying how they assign 500 potential prospects, you know, to each BDR and SDR. And I'm like thinking, like, but yet they're selling a high ticket solution. I'm like, that seems like a total transactional mindset bumping into, you know, something that is going to be counterintuitive and counterproductive for you. But it's like, you know, hey, we can automate it. slam everything to it. And I'm like, I don't see that going well.
Well, I'm with you. To me, that's marketing. And yes, you can automate, and there will be a certain number of people who are already predisposed, right? I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I'm saying you'll only get a certain number of people through the automation. And if that is the model the company wants, and it wants to remove people and then just have customer service folks, great. Do that if that's your mission, your purpose, and your value is to automate, not relationship.
Right.
It's right.
Well, but here's the thing, and this is where you and I were talking about. I'm like, a lot of this stuff, I think people are just being snookered. For example, if you look at that model, and so essentially what I'm attempting to do is to create demand, right? And you talk about marketing. So I want to create demand. The reality is that the statistics show that the average to be able to actually get anywhere with that is 0.5%. Mm-hmm. Start running these numbers, right? I have to build relationships and make sales. If you start doing the conversions on all this, in order for me to have any credible sales, I have to have over 500,000 visitors, to whatever I'm trying to push out.
Yeah.
And in order for me to get to decent numbers that could support a business, I'm like, that's just not possible and nowhere near as sustainable. But yet so many organizations are going down this path thinking, oh, I've got to do this stuff in order to generate that. And I'm like, oh my goodness, there's just a whole lot of fallacies in that. And we're getting snookered. What do we need to do differently?
Okay. I'm seeing this. It's very, because this has always been the way I just see it, and I'm going to share it with you. So let's imagine that this sales manager has got the sales team around a table. Everybody envision that. And this has come up. This is the product we need to get out. Here's the companies that are likely to need this product, and it costs whatever it costs. That sales manager could say, go talk to all those, we're divvying it up. Go talk to all those people about their problems and sell this product. Or they could say, here's the companies. I want you all to go research the decision makers. All of you are going to research all the decision makers of those companies. Look at their social profiles. See, this is where social media comes in so easy. Look at their social profiles. Come back and you tell me which ones you feel you're in alignment with based upon what they've got on their profile, that you've got things in common with them personally. They hang out where you hang out. Let's start there. And we're going to divvy up the list based upon who feels the most affinity with these decision makers. Now, that would be completely different than what happens in sales teams.
That's very true. And I think the scale issue is where a lot of people have problems. So if I have, for example, 10 BDRs and they have 500 each of all these potential companies that we want to go out, there's no way they have time to research all that. They got to make sales, right? So it's like, okay, to me, it's like if I have a short-term mindset of conversion, connecting, converting, it's not going to bode well when we start thinking of long-term sales funnel and sales generation and conversion.
But that's exactly it. So use the automation for the short term. But what do we always hear? It is less expensive to retain a customer than to find a new one. This is what I'm talking about. The prioritization. You asked me. Here's another one. The 80-20 rule. I would love to see the 80-20 rule die a quick death, because we've always heard 80% of the sales will come from 20% of the customer. Well, then why don't we just serve those 20% and make it 100%? And automate out to the other 80% if you want, but let's truly build long-term great relationships. And here's why. In an industry, so let's say you're selling a high-end copier. the people who are buying those high-end copiers for these companies, they belong to trade associations, right? They're in professional organizations. If they love you and your company, they're going to tell other people about it who also would need. And so they get together and it's like, I'm just out of curiosity. We need to replace the copier. Who do you use? Oh my God, I love this. Really? That's how relationship works.
Well, okay. So now, but again, this goes into the strategy component. All the statistics say if you're growth minded and growth focused, it is about new logos and I have to acquire new business. That's where significant growth comes from. However, I can't churn and burn. So the retention piece is important. But when you start talking about referrals and all that stuff, it's not predictable. I might get two this month and don't get any more for the rest of the year. And so if I'm talking about sales projections, sales pipeline, conversion, and projected growth numbers that I have to now take forth to, you know, the people who are maybe financing my business and things like that, it just doesn't align.
I hear you, but there is marketing and there is sales. And this is where the line gets blurred.
Boom. Exactly. So, and before we started recording, I said, I'm a sales guy that was forced to do marketing. And unfortunately I started getting, and I tell you, I finally realized I was being snookered when I started getting on yet another social platform, thinking that it was going to fill my sales pipeline. And I pulled back from that and I'm like, no, this is ridiculous. It's not predictable. I need to focus in on predictability. That would be a very, very different strategy to talk about brand marketing and all of those, demand gen, account based man, all that kind of stuff. Versus, true, sales activity. And that's what, like you're saying, people blend it together. So I think, what's the oddest thing in our world? Somebody who's in charge of sales and marketing.
Yes. And the fact that it goes that way, sales, then marketing. No, marketing, create brand awareness, find out who's, who's, as they say, the low hanging fruit. Great. But sales is sales. And whether you're a company or an entrepreneur, solopreneur, I have always said, if you do not have time, patience, and money to build relationship, get out. Because sales requires a very simple process. You have to build your audience, which means researching that audience, figuring out who you're going to talk to. It does take time. The bigger the company, the higher the price point, it takes more time. Then you have to be in this engagement process of learning about your audience. This is where these questions
come in. Okay, so hold on. I got it. So you just hit a moment came for me to where I think this is where also some of the confusion can come into play. So if I'm thinking, this is what I've, again, smacked my head in a moment, is I need to be thinking more about ideal customer profiles in the sales world.
Yes.
I need to be thinking about audience in the marketing world.
Yes.
But you were just talking about audience in the sales world. So that's where some of the confusion. I want to create clarity.
Once you've identified the audience, it's pretty easy to identify an audience. Hopefully, the reason the company is creating the product or the service is the problem that's happening for your audience, right?
So no, let me stop you. I can't tell you how many discussions I've had about people saying that we're not sure about our ICP and our go-to-market strategy. Because here's what happens with a lot of companies. I get one or two clients or one or two customers. They essentially have funded my business. And so now I want to grow that business. And so I need to go out and find my ICP. But I never really did it because those two customers came in so darn easy for me.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, there you go. There's the problem right there. And again, the marketing didn't help you identify, not you, of course, them identify where the additional problems are. What is not being solved by every other company or product out there? That's questioning. Marketing can do that. The salesperson then asks the questions of the people who are in charge of making those decisions to verify that information and to get more information. marketing can attract a certain amount, but then you, the salesperson, talks to the audience. That's what it is. And when there's been enough understanding, because that's the purpose. Yes, it's to get to trust for sure. But before trust can happen, understanding has to happen. Alignment has to happen. When two people understand each other, the next logical thing that usually occurs is they start co-creating together. Hmm. Right? That's what alignment. Let's do something together. Well, I've got this product or service that you can try or see or buy, and let's see how it works for you. And let's collaborate together and work together. And that's true sales. That's what marketing cannot do, is create collaboration.
Well, and as you're saying that too, part of that is also when you talk about audience, ideal customer profile, trying to get into, you know, that connection, collaborative piece. Part of that is also recognizing when there's people who you shouldn't even be going down that path with. I mean, I had one last week where this guy was just jumping to and saying, well, what's the price? What's the price? Well, we're going through an ROI model, right? Going through an ROI model.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, you've blacked out the price on this sheet. I said, yeah, because it doesn't matter. Because if we can't pay for it, what the heck does the price matter? I said, we've got to work through an ROI model to say that, okay, we're investing this, we expect this, and then therefore, you know, this is what our projections are concerned. I said, and if we don't do that work, we don't need to talk about price. You and I can just say, hey, have a good day.
Well, and I'm with you if I don't know the person, and I'm going to say that in that particular case, this is what I would have said. I'm going to give you the price. I want to understand, how much research have you already done? Are you simply at this point, you're already sold that you want this product? You're just comparing pricing. I would have just asked more questions. And I have this concept, and I teach it all the time. I didn't actually put it in the book, so this is an extra one. I like to think of myself as a bouncer in front of an exclusive club, no matter what I'm selling. So, yes.
And you look small framed for that. Wait a minute.
I know, but the brain, the power is big. Just because somebody looks like they could use my product or my service doesn't mean I want them. And see, I think that's another skill we want to teach our salespeople, that it's okay to have stature and posture and not be pushovers. So if we go in with, I know who's perfect for this, I know who I'm the perfect partner to be with in my business, then what happens is it's very easy to start asking questions. Why should I let you in? So somebody like, but I agree with you, there are many people, if the minute somebody starts asking what's the price, they get excited thinking, oh my God, they're ready to buy. No, they're not. No, there's something else that's going on underneath that. So yeah, I'll say, sure, I can give you the price. Before I do, I want to understand, how much research have you already done? Are you ready to make a buy today? Because if so, I might be able to get you an even better price. Or what is the reason you're asking me about price before you ask me about any of the features and benefits of the product?
That's good. That's awesome. That's very practical application. So when I start thinking about modifying, you know, our processes, modifying our practices, modifying the script, as you say, you know, there's all kinds of different sales models out there. I'm not going to name names. Some of them are very, very popular. Some of them are not so popular. But when you start looking at the landscape of, you know, corporate selling and corporate training and all of that stuff, what's missing?
Well, I would say what's missing starts in the hiring process of finding out what are the person in front of you, what are their personal goals for their life? Like, true, and I understand that, you know, there are certain things we can ask and there are other things we absolutely cannot ask. But I don't see how it could be wrong to ask somebody, not where do you see yourself in 5 years, but what are the goals you have? I would love to know. I want to be able to see if our company can support you in that. Are you planning to go back to school? Do you see yourself wanting to travel at some point? Tell me more about you and what your values are. What would you say are your top three values? How do those values match what our company's values are? Are you wanting a job because it's you need steady employment? Or are you wanting to actually create a career? And what would that career look like? See, all of that has to happen before the person ever sits in front of the sales manager or whoever is, because a lot of the hiring doesn't ever happen by the sales manager. It happens somewhere else first, the selection process. When the sales manager is talking with a prospective member of their team, those questions have to be asked again. And then the opportunity to have the other person ask me about mine, I'm going to tell you about mine. So being vulnerable. So if I was the sales manager, after I ask them, I'm going to say, and I'm going to tell you about what my goals are, why I'm here, why I'm going to stick around here. I'm going to tell you my training style. So even like when I bring on a new client, this is one of the things I actually say. I say, I am never going to be upset with you, but I'm going to tell you there are going to be times you think I am, because I have these lines right here. And when I'm thinking, these lines get really deep and I look angry. I know I do. Like, who says stuff like that, right, in an interview? But I do. I say this to a prospective client. Just be aware. I know it. You don't have to. If you think I'm angry, please ask me. And so I start relationship from the get-go.
And okay. Yeah. So I mean, and I want to make sure we get this in with the time that we have, because we talked about, you know, really changing the environment, changing the thinking, you know, doing a better job at the whole hiring piece, but the retention piece, a lot of things that have been coming up lately in those roundtable discussions is people talking about changing their comp models, right? So what are your thoughts on that?
It is not money. So here's a study, and I apologize. I can't, it's in the book. I can't think of which study, who did the study. This is a true, actually, I think I can. It's Harvard Business Review. Do you know that a third of managers never give positive feedback? They did a study on acknowledgement and in I'll just leave it there, acknowledgement of employees. A full third never give positive reinforcement. What the? I'm just going to say, okay? Because again, if we go back to human psychology, people will do more for positive acknowledgement than they will for money. Now, we're not saying they don't love the money, but money does not keep people around. Appreciation, empathy, consideration. The just before you give negative feedback, you identify something that was done well. And then you tweak it from there. That's what's satisfying to people's souls. Nobody needs to be told what they're doing wrong. We heard it growing up. So let's stop doing that and let's start appreciating the people who are in front of us. And keep encouraging them to keep expanding and doing better. And you know what? All of a sudden, those comp models can stay just the way they are. And people will stick around.
So now we've been talking about it. Let's go ahead and give the formula. So the alignment marketing formula is alignment plus belief times consistency. And what it equates to is sales, satisfaction, and success.
Yes, it sure does.
Stacy Hall. It was an awesome conversation. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on all social platforms. And I'll say if you go to Stacey, STACEYANN, Stacey Ann Hall, HALL.com, you can get my blog. You can get some free courses from me. You can find out about the book, StaceyAnnHall.com. I am on Facebook, Stacey Hall 1, LinkedIn, Stacey Hall 1, Instagram, Success with Stacey Hall. It, and through this podcast, right?
That's right.
Jim, it has been so much fun. I'm so glad we didn't plan the questions. I love the way your brain thinks.
Stacey Hall, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.